is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is John Russell.
Just below large cruise ships near the port of Miami, an underwater camera captures video from another world. That camera is showing marine life in an unusual way. The camera is in Miami's government-cut waterway for shipping, and it belongs to Coral Morphologic. It is a business led by a scientist and a musician. They mix science, art, and business to bring undersea life into popular culture. Their company produces beautiful images that show underwater creatures on social media. It also makes videos of coral set to music, and it sells clothing for the beach with ocean designs. Colin Ford and his business partner J.D. McKay recently discussed their business with the Associated Press. "We aren't all art. We aren't all science. We aren't all tech. We are in alchemy," Ford said. Alchemy is a term that means a process that changes or transforms something into something else even more valuable. One of their most popular projects is the Coral City camera. It recently passed 2 million views and usually has about 100 viewers online at any given time each day. Ford said, "We're going to actually be able to document 1 year of coral growth." He said that has never been done in a live environment on a coral reef. Ford added that is only possible because we have this technological connection right here at the Port of Miami that allows us to have power and internet. The live stream has already revealed that staghorn and other corals can do well in an undersea environment close to a large city. Ford and McKay's video has shown fluorescence in some of the coral. "That is an unexpected behavior for such corals," Ford said. Ford added that the video has shown 177 species of fish and other sea life, including dolphins and manatees. McKay, meanwhile, described how he mixes video and music in another project. He uses an aquarium, a very large container for sea creatures. McKay explained, "We essentially create a set with one of these aquariums, and then obviously there's actors, coral or shrimp or whatever, and then we film it. I soundtrack it with some ambient-like sounds, something very oceanic. Ambient music is quiet and relaxing, with sounds that repeat many times." Ford described the importance of their work to the environment. "The port is a priceless place for coral research," he said. Beyond the science, there are the clothes. Coral Morphologic sells swimwear that takes designs from flower anemones and brain coral. The company says it uses materials that are good for the environment, such as a kind of nylon taken from old fishing nets. "We see the power of tech connecting people with nature. We are lucky as artists, and corals are benefiting," Ford said. I'm John Russell.
coverings will not have to be worn in airports and on flights in Europe starting May 16th. The European Union Aviation Safety Agency, EASA, and European Center for Disease Prevention and Control, ECDC, announced the new policy on Wednesday. EASA Executive Director Patrick Key said, "From next week, face masks will no longer need to be mandatory in air travel in all cases." Key said the move was in line with requirements from national transport officials across Europe. Italy, France, Bulgaria, and other European countries have been easing or ending many or all of their measures to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Several U.S. airlines said they would no longer require masks in April. The move came after a federal judge in Florida ruled that the U.S. administration's mask requirement for public transport was unlawful. ECDC Director Andrea Amon said, "Although wearing masks would not be mandatory, together with physical distancing and good hand hygiene, it is one of the best methods of reducing transmission." Hygiene is a term that describes things done to keep yourself clean, to stay healthy. After the mandatory requirement is lifted, rules for wearing masks are expected to be different between airlines in Europe. Airlines will encourage passengers to use masks on flights to or from places where mask wearing on public transport is still required, the agencies said.
News reporters are increasingly using technology tools to cover stories in new ways. One kind of news gathering is known as open source reporting. This is when reporters use publicly available materials to help them tell stories. These can include satellite images, video from mobile phones or security cameras, and social media information. The field of open source reporting is still very young, but some major news organizations have already created separate news teams to center on technology-based reporting methods. The New York Times newspaper has established an investigative reporting department that specializes in open-source reporting. The Washington Post recently announced it was adding 6 people to a special video forensics team. The New York Times published a story based on such reporting in March. The piece was based on radio communications between Russian soldiers during the first 24 hours of a Russian invasion of the town of Makariv outside Kyiv, Ukraine. The newspaper said it collected hundreds of recordings from Russian military forces that communicated in the field by radio. It said the communications were publicly available because they were not encrypted or protected by technology. The Times said the recordings were captured and provided by amateur radio operators and open-source groups that gather communications from across the world. Some recordings suggested disorganization in military activities. Russian soldiers were heard describing a lack of supplies and non-working equipment. In one recording, the Times team noted that someone appearing to support Ukraine broke into the communications and advised Russian troops to go home. The Times reporters said they did not only use information contained in the recordings for their story. They also attempted to confirm details such as dates, times, and places heard in the communications. They did this by collecting publicly available videos, social media messages, and eyewitness descriptions. Another project the Times team took on was a report called Day of Rage. It sought to piece together events during the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol. The report included video captured by protesters themselves, as well as material from law enforcement and reporters. It described in detail how the attack began, who the protest leaders were, and how people were killed. A Times video investigation also provided information about an American drone attack that killed 10 civilians in Afghanistan last year. U.S. military officials thought they had targeted a vehicle used by terrorists planning to attack Kabul's airport in the final days of a U.S. pullout from the country. But evidence presented in the Times investigation showed that the drone attack killed a food aid worker who had been transporting water in areas near the airport. Two other adults and 7 children also died in the strike. U.S. military officials later admitted that the drone had hit the wrong target. The availability of satellite images from private companies has also led news organizations to use them in open-source reporting. In one example, the Times used satellite images to quickly disprove Russian claims that atrocities carried out in Ukraine had been staged. Other technology, including artificial intelligence, is helping reporters seeking to learn how something happened. In 2018, the Times worked with a British company to digitally rebuild a structure in Syria that helped disprove official denials about the use of chemical weapons. In a similar way, the Associated Press created a 3D model of a theater in the Ukrainian city of Mariupol that was bombed by Russian forces. The model, combined with video and interviews with survivors, led to an investigative report that suggested more people died there than first thought. The AP has cooperated with other organizations on several open-source investigations and is looking to further expand its own efforts. These included a look into terror methods used by Myanmar's military government an examination of the effects of war on a Gaza neighborhood and possible war crimes in Ukraine. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
America at its best matches a commitment to principle with a concern for civility.
Bush, the Republican nominee, defeated Vice President Al Gore, the Democratic candidate, in the presidential election of 2000. A dispute over the ballot count in Florida delayed the declaration of a winner and only added to political divisions in the country. The results in Florida were extremely close. 5 weeks passed as courts considered the issues. Finally, a conservative majority on the United States Supreme Court settled the matter. George Bush was to be president. Bush gave his inaugural speech on January 20th, 2001.
With a simple oath, we affirm old traditions and make new beginnings. As I begin, I thank President Clinton for his service to our nation. And I thank Vice President Gore for a contest conducted with spirit and ended with grace.
The new president spoke of American ideals.
The grandest of these ideals is an unfolding American promise that everyone belongs, that everyone deserves a chance, that no insignificant person was ever born.
And he called on Americans to care for and respect each other.
Today we affirm a new commitment to live out our nation's promise through civility, courage, compassion, and character. America at its best matches a commitment to principle with a concern for civility. A civil society demands from each of us goodwill and respect, fair dealing, and forgiveness.
Soon after his inauguration, President Bush established the White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. The goal was to fight problems like homelessness and drug abuse with the help of social agencies connected to religious groups. Critics argued that this could violate the separation of religion and government under the United States Constitution. But the president said the agencies would provide shelter and food, not Bibles. President Bush took several actions on the environment during his first term, two of which brought strong protests from environmentalists. In March 2001, he made the decision to reject the Kyoto Protocol. That international treaty sought reductions in the release of carbon dioxide and other industrial gases blamed for trapping heat in the atmosphere. Negotiators approved the treaty in Kyoto, Japan, at the end of 1997, to show their concern about climate change. Vice President Gore later signed the Kyoto Protocol for the United States. But President Bill Clinton never sent it to the Senate for its required approval. The treaty faced enough opposition in the Senate that it might have been defeated. President Bush decided to unsign the treaty. He said he did not want to put the United States at a competitive disadvantage with big developing countries like China and India. Those countries would not have been required to cut the large amounts of greenhouse gases they were producing. Bush said the agreement was unfair and would harm American industry at a time when the economy was weakening. Critics said the president's decision would harm the environment and set a bad example for the world. Another environmental issue concerned exploring for oil and natural gas. The president supported a measure to allow drilling in a wildlife refuge in the state of Alaska. He said doing so would reduce American dependence on foreign oil. Opponents argued that it would destroy wildlife in some of America's most beautiful natural surroundings. In the end, the environmentalists won. Congress did not approve the drilling.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule.
One of President Bush's major domestic goals was improving America's public education system.
Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring, goes the bell.
In January 2002, he signed legislation passed by Congress called the No Child Left Behind Act.
We owe the children of America a good education, and today begins a new era. A new time in public education in our country. As of this hour, America's schools will be on a new path of reform and a new path of results.
The law increased the role of the federal government in an area where Americans have traditionally defended local control, public education. No Child Left Behind had several goals. To help poor and minority students improve their performance, to provide choices for parents with students in low-performing schools, and to increase money for schools in low-income areas. The law required all students in grades 3 through 8 to be tested every year in reading and math. It held schools responsible for showing that all students were making progress based on standards chosen by the states themselves. No Child Left Behind had many supporters, but critics said the expectations were unreasonable and that teachers might just teach to the test. Another major piece of legislation dealt with health care for older Americans. President Bush wanted to extend Medicare, the nation's health insurance program, for people 65 and older.
For nearly four decades, Medicare has been the binding commitment of a caring society. We must renew that commitment by providing our seniors with the preventative care and new medicines that are transforming health care in our country. We must protect seniors from high medical costs that can rob them of their savings. And we must place patients and their doctors at the center of every health care decision. My goal is to give seniors more choices and better benefits under Medicare, including a long-awaited prescription drug benefit.
In 2003, he signed a law to help 40 million older Americans pay for their medicine. On another issue, he banned federal funding for research on any new stem cells taken from human embryos. But he agreed to allow the first federal spending on research on existing lines of embryonic stem cells. Such cells interest some medical researchers because they can grow into different kinds of cells. But opponents object, for moral and religious reasons, to destroying embryos for the purpose of harvesting stem cells. George Bush promised to cut taxes for Americans. In 2001, he signed a bill passed by Congress calling for more than $1 trillion in tax reductions over time. The president said the economy would improve if people had more money to spend. In 2003, Congress passed $350 billion in additional tax reductions. That was less than half of what the president had proposed. In 2002, President Bush signed a law that increased punishments for financial dishonesty by companies. The new law also established an independent group to oversee the accounting industry. The action came after several major companies failed, including, in 2001, Enron.
I got money wherever I go. I see money beginning to grow.
Enron had grown into America's leading energy company.
In the canyons of downtown Houston, home to the country's energy giants, a sense of gloom surrounds this one. Only months ago, it was the mightiest of them all. Now Enron answers the phone with this recorded message.
On December 2nd, Enron filed under Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code, thus commencing proceedings to stabilize our financial situation.
It was at that time the largest bankruptcy in American history. 10,000 people lost their jobs. Some Enron investors lost all their money in the failure. Former employees lost the retirement benefits they needed to live on. Some top Enron officials were found to have used dishonest accounting methods to hide financial problems from investors. Enron's troubles also involved two large banks, Chase and Citigroup, and a big financial company, Merrill Lynch.
Enron couldn't have engaged in the deceptions it did without the help from a major financial institution. Merrill Lynch assisted Enron in cooking its books by pretending to purchase an existing Enron asset when it was really engaged in a loan.
Senator Carl Levin led a hearing into accounting and consulting practices and how they benefited Enron. Those actions included inflating the value of the company's stock. The collapse of Enron was followed by a series of other corporate failures linked to dishonest accounting methods. November 2nd, 2004 was Election Day. 4 years earlier, George W. Bush had been elected in one of the closest races in American history. Now he would have another chance to test his popularity with the American people.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.